And Michael Kohler is our special guest as we talk about Coral Castle Explained. You know, for years, we have talked about this magnificent facility, Homestead, Florida. Little Edward Leedskalnin from Latvia came to the United States, and he built this structure. Said he knew the secrets of the pyramids. Said he understood magnetics. So I want to get in with Michael here and get his thoughts on all of this with his new work, Coral Castle Explained. Welcome back. Michael Kohler with us. Michael, of course, is an independent researcher, investigator, looking into the mystery of Coral Castle, lifelong interest in the paranormal. He is looking into Edward Leedskalnin and the possibilities of how he created Coral Castle. Let's talk with Michael about it. Michael, this is fascinating. How are you?
I'm good, George. How are you?
Good.
Happy
good.
Belated birthday.
Thank you, Michael. How did you get interested in Coral Castle? How did that start for you?
Well, my interest in Coral Castle began back in the 1980s. I saw Edward Leedskalnin's Coral Castle on In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
I remember that. That's right.
Yeah. And seeing the 9-ton gates spin around and the Polaris telescope, and I was intrigued even at a young age as to how one man could do all of this by himself. Some of the blocks weighing in excess of 30 tons.
I know, amazing.
Amazing. And he moved it, he built it and moved it to Homestead with the original 200 tons from Florida City, and then added an additional 900 tons in Homestead using the oolitic coral there.
And didn't he load those blocks on this flatbed truck by himself, told the truck driver, go away for a little bit?
Yes, yes. He contracted with Bob Biggers, and he used a flatbed truck with solid rubber tires. And he had to do that because they were so heavy. And he would ask them to leave, and they'd come back in a few days, and they would be off of the flatbed. What's interesting about that, and Mr. Kant is dead, Orville Irwin talks about how he helped Ed move his primitive tools to the Homestead site before moving any of the larger blocks. So it's kind of funny. He moved his tools before he actually moved the actual coral pieces.
Now, let's talk about Leedskalnin. He was a little guy, right? About 120 pounds?
Yes. Yeah, he was about 5 feet tall, 120 pounds. He was born in Latvia, 1887. And about the age of 26, he wanted to marry a woman by the name of Agnes Scuffs, who was 16 years old.
Loved his Agnes, didn't he?
Loved his Agnes. That was his sweet 16. Unfortunately, she didn't have the same feelings. She thought he was either too poor, didn't have enough education, he was not tall enough, whatever it was. She jilted him at the altar, and that caused him to leave Latvia. And he ended up coming through Canada, down through Washington into California, and did a cattle drive into Texas. The mystery is how he actually got to southern Florida, especially with having stage 4 tuberculosis. That's not the best place to be.
No, not at all. Now, you know, and he said, Michael, that he knew the secrets of the pyramids. He understood magnetism. And then we're going to talk about, you know, that some of those machines that were left behind there at Coral Castle, and have you probably shed some light on that for us. But those things that he said about the pyramids, about magnetism, got to have played an influence or a role in this, don't you think?
Well, yes. Ed had a different take on magnetism and polarity in regard to regular science. He believed that everything had a positive and a negative polarity. So
not just magnetic and not just metal things.
Right, right. He believed coral, obviously, from the Coral Castle.
Right.
But he also believed that wood, any object, had a polarity. So based upon that concept, theoretically, if you think of the tripods, for instance, we have these pictures that Ed took by himself with his Brownie box camera. And it shows him with these enormous tripods. I mean, they must have weighed a couple tons apiece. And to imagine one man setting up telephone poles all by himself and then shimmying up the side of them with the the pulleys and then putting those black boxes on top. What if he could actually negate gravity for those as well? He wouldn't have had to have worked at all to put them up. I believe he actually used them for two purposes. He did it for show. He was a showman. He took the pictures to drive traffic to the Coral Castle. But secondarily, I believe that the black boxes actually did play a role, because you do see wires coming down, and they must have served some type of purpose.
Yes.
At the homestead site.
And you know, he left behind this machinery also that, you know, looked like they were these constant magnets that went around. But I guess somebody must have taken pieces away or something, Michael. What happened to it?
Right. What seems to be left is half of it. And I did a video on this the other day, the third part in a series. And when you're looking at counter-rotational fields and how you have one disc that's larger than the other, one's going counterclockwise, one's going clockwise, and this is supposed to create a tertiary field of energy. Well, what seems to be missing with Ed's apparatus is the other half. And so if he actually did have this running, someone apparently has taken the other part of this, and if it was running, it was running underneath where he slept. And in one of my chapters, I talk about, I believe that he actually died as a result of working with these electromagnetic fields on a constant basis.
That's an interesting theory.
So I don't know where the other half is, but if we could ever get the other half, we could actually try something out.
Tell me a little bit more about Skelnin. What don't we know about him that you do?
Well, I go over two different versions of Ed's story. There's the usual version that we basically covered most of that earlier. But a lot of the information doesn't talk about his age, for instance. I mean, when he was 33 years old is when he got the tuberculosis. By the time he actually decides to move from Florida City in 1937, he was actually 50 years old. So not that 50 is old, but he wasn't this strong spring chicken individual, this youthful man that's, you know, in the minds of many people, lifting these blocks with his brute strength. He was actually calculating that move, in my opinion, for years. And that's why in 1937, when he moves the original 200 tons, according to Orville Irwin and Mr. Kant Is Dead Again, he says that the whole complex was operational by 1940. And that means that between the years of 1937 and 1940, he actually moved the original 200 tons, and then he added an additional 900 tons at the homestead site.
By himself?
By himself. In 3 years. I mean, how is that possible? Some of the blocks there are, again, as weighty as the ones from the Florida City side.
Now, he built this structure, and it's a strange structure. Did he build it for the Sweet Agnes, or was it there another purpose?
Well, the original site was probably built for Agnes. There's a definite difference in the symbology and the construction of that site. For instance, at the original site in Florida City, it's more like a domestic rock garden. He has beds, tables, chairs. He goes into a bit of symbology, the crescent of the east, which is that large representation of a crescent moon. He has the obelisk, that's that 40-foot tall spire with the six-pointed star at the top. So that, in my opinion, was built for Agnes. When he moved to Homestead, Orville Irwin again asked...
And he had to move, right? He didn't like the neighbors or something?
Well, there's a couple theories on that. There was an impinging subdivision, he was beaten up and threatened, things like that. And he liked his privacy. But the problem with the theories in regard to his privacy, for instance, the Coral Castle right now is on the side of Highway 1 on Dixie Highway, the busiest street in southern Florida. So if you're a person that likes your privacy, you're not going to build on the busiest road. So I think that he moved, and Orville Irwin also confirms this, that he wanted to be closer to people. He actually invited people over to after church. He would have cookouts and visit with people. So he was a social person, but just a very odd person that had an interesting way of expressing his gifts.
Well, let's get into the other aspects of this area. So he built it. I mean, how big is it if you looked at it?
You know, I was trying to think of that the other day. I think it's about 50 yards by 50 yards.
That's pretty good size.
Yeah.
Is it in disarray now, or does it still look okay?
Oh, it looks great. I haven't been there in several years, but when I went there, it was well kept. It was well taken care of. The trees, if you look at the older pictures, you can see how much the trees have grown. It would actually be nice to not have the trees there, especially with the Google overhead view, so you could actually get a better understanding of the layout, where he placed certain pieces, how those might connect with energy frequencies within the complex itself. But it's well taken care of.
Okay. All right. So tell me your interest. When you say Coral Castle Explained in your book, that tells me you know something.
Well, what I figured out was that there's a mathematical concept called phi built into the complex itself. And phi is a mathematical concept based on the Fibonacci sequence. I don't know if you,
I sure do.
The Fibonacci sequence is a series of numbers. If you take 0 and 1, if you add those together, you get 1, and you add that to the front. Then you add 1 and 1 again, and you get 2. And this goes on out to infinity. So what phi is if you take the larger number, divide it by the smaller number, and you always come up with a number that's close to 1.618. So in my original computations, I did something very simple. I said, well, what does 1.618 mean? Well, I rounded the 8 up and the 2 down, and I got 16. So my initial thinking on this was that sweet 16 actually referred to phi. And I started looking into what phi was and how it talks. It basically is a concept of how things grow in nature. Things always grow with a phi numeric growth rate. And this can be seen in vegetables, fruit, seashells. And that's actually how I came upon this concept, looking at this sculpture that he had made by the tower. And he had made a trapezoidal structure, and it had seashells in it, and a little face, which I call a monkey. I call the thing the monkey in the shell.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon that, I looked into the concept of phi, and that's how I developed this whole theory, that the structure itself is based upon phi, and phi is balance. So if you look at anything in architecture that is beautiful or symmetric or balanced, it's based upon that concept.
Are the pyramids based on that too?
Yes, the golden mean is there have been many calculations done to show that the golden mean is the same as phi, is built into the pyramid as well. So there's a similarity there as far as structural, how they built it. But there's also a similarity in regard to the limestone and the coral, which we can address that later, but they're very similar, and that similarity is part of the secret that he rediscovered in regard to how he moved and carved the coral blocks.
How would he have found this?
I have a kind of a way out theory. When he was found by the realtor Mosier, he was almost dead, and Mosier took him in and nursed him back to health, and that's where he originally got his first acre of property for $12. In Florida City. I believe he had a near-death experience. And there have been many people in history, like Sir Francis Crick admitted right before he died that he he was on an LSD trip, and he saw the I think it was the double helix of the DNA strand, and from that experience, this altered state experience, he was able to draw upon something that you couldn't see, and then find out what it was, and so this inspired him. So in the same way, Ed seems to have tapped into what Rupert Sheldrake would call a morphogenic field, a morphic field, where by feeling that feeling, Greg Braden talks about that, when you feel a feeling of something, you can tap into this morphic field and then access whatever it does.
Okay, so he finds this. He has this ability. What does it do? Generate resonance, some kind of sound? What happens?
Well, I think, for instance, I do hands-on healing, and when you do healing, you go into a clear state, you clear your mind, and I just remember how it feels, and I think that's what he did. If it's a tone, if it's a vibrational sense, I'm not sure what he would have felt, but in the same sense, it's a knowing, and when you have that knowing, that allows that morphic field to actually turn on. And so he would clear his mind and he would be able to do this. I go into detail in the book about how the symbology actually shows, especially the crescent of the moon and or the crescent of the east and the moon fountain, it kind of documents when he was able to do this. There were actually times of the year and times of the month where he would have been able to do this more easily than he would otherwise. So that may have confused him. He may have thought, well, why can't I do it now? Or why can't I do it now?
Where did he get the blocks, Michael?
Which ones? The square?
The big ones. I mean, where'd they come from?
Well, Florida, South Florida is basically a large chunk of coral. And I think there's about 6 inches of topsoil covering the actual coral. So at Florida City, you have a very layered oolite. Oolite is basically coral. And it's very dark in color. So when you see the obelisk or you see the crescent of the east, that was just taken right out of the ground. And also at the homestead site, it was also taken out of the ground. But that coral is very light colored. It's very porous. So if you've ever gone snorkeling, it looks very similar to the coral that you would see under the water.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, tell me more about this guy.
More about Ed? Well, I believe Ed had a change of thinking. He was talking to Orville Irwin, and Orville asked him, well, why don't you talk about Agnes anymore? This was after he had moved everything to the homestead site. And he said, I left her in Florida City. Well, I don't think he literally left her. I don't think she ever came to visit. But what he meant was he left that way of doing the miraculous. He used a different system for moving the blocks in Florida City than he did at the homestead site. At the homestead site, you have a lot of blocky, chunky, it's like Legos, large Legos. He's got the Polaris telescope, very rectangular. All of the blocks that surround the complex, rectangular again, the 243-ton
tower. Hold on for a second, Michael. Come back. We'll talk more on Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, I saw a video some time ago of Neil Sedaka on a Florida great DJ by the name of Rick Shaw. Those of you down in the Miami, Florida area, let me know if Rick's still around. I know he retired back in 2007, lost touch with what he's doing, but send me an email, george@coasttocoastam.com. Very curious to see where Rick Shaw is these days. He was one of the original greats. He really was. But let me know what has happened to him. Again, he retired in 2007. We're going to come back in a moment. Michael Kohler with us. Coral Castle Explained. We'll have him explain it when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Michael, kind of paint a picture for us then from the moment he was in Florida City. Explain how he built these. I mean, take us through the procedure. What's going on with Ed Leetskov?
Well, in the Florida city site, he was working with the dark oolitic coral in the ground. He may have began with something simple like the sun couch or a small chair. And from his initial experimentation with this power that he had, he then began to build larger and larger pieces. He only built the domestic furniture that I mentioned there, with the exception of the Crescent of the East and the obelisk. Now, in Egyptian culture, there are obelisks, and depending upon who you ask, the obelisk is used to either take energy from the water in the ground or to charge the energy under the ground. And I believe that that's what he did with the obelisk there as well. He put that in the ground, and it acted as a generator and a catcher for the energy when the sun would come up. And it allowed him to be able to do more work because he was able to gather more energy from the water. Now, the water, the connection with the water, I did research on Dr. Emoto.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing experiments where he would have people go into a positive state and a negative state and focus on water at a distance. The positive water would form a six-pointed star.
Gorgeous, the frozen look.
Yes, very much so. The negative would not even have a form. It would look kind of blobbish. So in a what I call a phi state of mind, a very balanced state of mind, your state, your vibrational frequency, seems to convey this six-pointed star on a vibrational level. So that is why I believe he incorporated that into the obelisk in relation to the water, because he was actually drawing the water, or drawing the energy from the water, because he could connect to it with the water in his own body in the same way the Emoto experiments showed.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so he would continue to do this, but he only built so much. It was only 200 tons of coral. But after 17 years, I believe it was, he was isolated. He wanted to move. And so he decided to make this larger move. Maybe he thought Agnes was never coming. I actually believe Agnes was a real person. I believe that he was jilted at the altar. This was a real scenario. But after being there for so long and being lonely, and with the only people that were his friends, were the visitors to come see his miraculous coral pieces, he decided to move closer to where people were. So that basically is the story of the Florida city site in a nutshell. He built it initially for Agnes, but when she didn't come, he decided to move and do something else.
Okay, and he dismantles it then. Explain that.
Well, he hired Bob Biggers, and he loaded each piece individually. Actually, there were multiple pieces on some of the moves. And he would load them without people seeing. He would then drive up to Homestead, ask them to leave the trailer, and then he would take them off when they weren't looking. The interesting thing was, I've heard a couple different stories. Sometimes it's a couple days that he leaves the trailer. Sometimes it's a couple weeks. Regardless, how one individual could move the obelisk, for instance, which is 40 feet tall and 28 tons, by himself, and then set it up without the walls. Remember, at the Homestead site, he put all of the original coral first and then built everything else around it. So how he could not have been seen on the side of the road, you know, putting up a 28-ton obelisk into the ground, that's kind of hard to believe. So he had to have been using some other technology to do this very quickly and virtually effortlessly. For this to ever even work.
So he gets it to the Homestead. He assembles it. How long does it take him to put it back together?
Well, the original pieces, according to the literature, took him about a year to 2 years. Then the additional 900 tons was an additional 2 years after that. So from 1937 to 1940, probably the end of 1940, is how long it took to assemble the entire 1,100 tons that we see today.
Once he assembles it, does he ever tell anybody how he did it?
No. And on the Coral Castle website, it actually says that he would simply say that he knew the secrets of the pyramid builders and that you could do it too. That's kind of a bold statement, but he knew how to do it, but he never shared his secret. It's like the movie The Prestige. The moment that you give away the trick, the moment you tell people how you're doing something, you're worthless. You're not as special anymore. And he kept that with him till his death in 1951.
Who taught him the secret, Michael?
I believe that the secret came to him from the same place we all get inspiration. It was happenstance. I believe it happened when he was almost dead on the road. He had an experience where he experienced a out-of-body state, an altered state, and this information came to him. Either in a dream format or something like that. He didn't get it from the Florida City library or the Homestead library. There was no internet. There were no people building these down the block, so he couldn't ask anyone.
What if he was, this is bizarre, but what if he was a reincarnated Egyptian who helped build the pyramids the same way?
I would say that's a possibility because I believe in reincarnation. And if you have the same soul or a vibrational similarity to the soul that you had before, that knowledge that you had would cross over, come with you. And so as he's going through life one day, maybe it just activated. Maybe it just turned on.
It kicked right in, yeah.
And he said, I have to build. Like Field of Dreams.
You've got a YouTube channel. Tell me about that because it's a tie-in with some of the things that may have been going on at Coral Castle.
Well, the YouTube channel, I set that up a couple years ago. I at first did a couple videos here and there, but then I started, the more I researched, the more I wanted to write out the pieces. Most of what I put on the YouTube channel is actually not in the book. I added a couple new chapters a few days ago. But it goes into detail about the pineal gland. It talks about counter-rotating fields. It talks about the connection between the limestone that was used to build the Giza complex and the correlation with that and the coral that Ed used. They're very similar. They're based on calcium carbonate. And so these videos were put up just to draw interest to the subject. And I didn't know it would go really beyond that. So I just put it up for people to watch.
Okay.
And that's how the videos got there.
Now, tell me about this relationship, though, with regards to Coral Castle and some of the videos you've put up. I mean, tell me about the connection, if any.
Oh, you mean the topics that I cover?
Yeah. I mean, what does it have to do with Coral Castle?
Well, the videos go into detail about how I believe Ed was able to do all of this. I go into one video talks about quartz crystals and their relationship to calcite. I then do another video on how calcite is found in the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is a gland that most scientists think is a leftover from evolution, but it's used in many rituals. You will see it on, for instance, the Pope's staff has one. The staff of Osiris has one. It's seen throughout history, and it seems to have a purpose because it sits at the exact center of the two hemispheres of the brain, right at the base. And the pineal gland was considered by Descartes to be the seat of the soul, the connection between God and man. So I thought, what if this was a broadcaster? What if this in some way could broadcast Ed's thoughts, his intentions, using this earth energy to connect with the coral? And that's where I found that the pineal gland actually does have calcite. And calcite is basically what coral is made of. So I had a connection. I had a connection that was very similar to quartz, where you have broadcasting ability. And so all I needed was, kind of sounds silly, but all I need now is a morphic field. I need to tap into that same thing. For instance, when I heal, I need to know that feeling. And if we could feel the feeling of what it feels like to lift or levitate a stone, once we are in that state of mind and connect with the coral, then we could do the same as it. That's what the videos are about.
And the moving of the blocks, I'm trying to picture him doing this. Is it anti-gravity? Is it the sound that's lifting it? What's happening here?
Well, I'm not sure if there would be a sound. I mean, I've never done it, obviously. I would assume.
Did he float them into place?
I think he did float them into place. For instance, the chisel marks. You see chisel marks on some of the stones that are on the wall that surrounds the complex.
All right.
Some of the guides actually told me that he put the chisel marks there to make it look like he used chisels.
Just to throw people off, huh?
It was a cover story, and I thought, well, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard until I looked at the 9-ton gate. Now, the 9-ton gate is 18,000 pounds. The blocks that make up the walls are about 5 or 6 tons. But there are no chisel marks on the 9-ton gate. None. Not any. So how is it that the lighter blocks needed to have chisels to get those out of the ground, but the 9-ton gate, which is perfectly balanced, you could touch it with your finger before it needed to be repaired, and it would spin in a complete 360. Why doesn't that have any marks?
Yeah.
So I'm starting to believe that perhaps the guides were actually telling me the truth. Maybe it was a cover story, so to speak.
Yeah, that, it might have been. How old was he when he died?
He was 51 years old.
Oh, he was young.
I'm sorry, he was 61 years old.
He's still young.
And there's an interesting difference in the pamphlets at the Coral Castle. It says that he died of stomach cancer, but they have a printout in this book by Rusty McClure of the certificate of death, and he actually died from uremia, which is toxicity of the kidneys. He also had, this is a strange word, pyelonephritis.
What's that?
Which it's a virus that infects the kidneys. And he had a cerebral hemorrhage brought on by possibly a stroke.
And you think this magnetism or whatever's out there had something to do with it?
Yes, yes. You've had a guest on by the name of Stuart Swerdlow.
Yes.
And he worked on the Montauk Project.
Yep.
And he said most of the children that were working with those types of energies, they died. And so I'm thinking prolonged exposure to these counter-rotating fields may have been his downfall. He didn't use that type of energy to do his initial moving. He used natural earth energy. But I think the reason he went in that direction is he was trying to help people do what he did and create a field of energy where they could also float the rocks, move the coral. But unfortunately, the overexposure, I think, led to all of these problems, and he ended up dying.
Whatever happened to his perpetual motion device that he said he had?
Well, I think that's the same as the flywheel.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah, that's the perpetual motion device.
Which is in pieces now, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's sitting down there. It's got magnets. It's got cement, where he cemented the magnets together in a variety of ways. Christopher Dunn actually, I think he went down and did a video of that, but he was actually testing it to see, you know, why is it special? What does it do? There doesn't seem to be anything overly interesting about it, but there does seem to be something missing because it doesn't work anymore.
There aren't too many people on this planet that have done what Ed Leeds Skolnick has done. And that means minimal people might have this kind of knowledge. Why is that? I mean, how can we have a planet of 6 plus billion people, and only have one person who knew these secrets?
Well, I'm not a believer in coincidence. I think that he actually had a purpose, and part of that purpose was building this and leaving without telling the secret. Why was he chosen? I don't know. I think your theory on the reincarnation is probably a really good one, that you have certain people that have this in them, and at the right time, they're activated, like the sleepers. They're activated, they do their purpose, and they move on. And so only a chosen few get to have this type of knowledge, and I think he was meant to have it, meant to do this. But why? How did he get it? Where did he get it from? I would have no clue, other than to, you know, speculate.
Did he have relatives here?
He had a nephew up in Chicago, I believe. He actually inherited the castle. He didn't want the castle. And so I think he sold it to the highest bidder. And they owned it for quite some time. I believe there's a new owner now.
And it's a tourist attraction, so they charge a little bit to get in there, right?
Yes.
That's how they generate some income for the place.
Yeah, the last time I went, I think it was $9. And if you come back the next day, you don't have to pay or something like that. It was relatively inexpensive.
And did Ol' Ed literally live there?
Yes, he has a...
Everything's stone, right?
Well, in the upstairs area, he actually had a bed on what looked like 2x8s. And he slept on these. I mean, there was no mattress, there was no bed. And these boards were suspended from chains, which were connected to the coral on the ceiling. So not the most comfortable living quarters and a very small area. It was a very, very sad thing to see, actually. It was just to imagine that this man that made this 1,100-ton structure lived in this little quarters all by himself and had really no family visiting, no friends. It was just a sad sight, but a marvelous sight.
Well, I tell you, it's a baffling situation. Did he have utilities out there?
He had to have had electricity. There was an account in Mr. Count Is Dead where it's talking about he had wires strung from many of the pieces. And although he told the authorities that he wasn't doing anything wrong and that it was for his radio, I think he was actually doing experiments with that flywheel, trying to generate those fields of energy.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Coral Castle, Michael, when we come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got a final hour of phone calls, lots of people interested in just chatting with you about this incredible area. If you've been to Coral Castle, check in with us as well. Love to get your stories on that. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.